Hi everyone, my name is Sebastian Mader. Today's discussion about materials and nanotechnology, and specifically, quantum dots. Here's a general outline for today's discussion. We'll have an introduction. I'll introduce quantum confinement, quantum dot synthesis, and you see quantum dot will often be just written as QD. We'll talk about colloidal methods, epitaxial growth, and then we'll talk about some specific applications in biology as light emitters and a few others. So the definition of quantum dots are nanoparticles or nanostructures that exhibit three-dimensional quantum confinement, and this leads to many unique optical and transport properties. Picture below is a gallium arsenide quantum dot containing 465 total atoms. Quantum dots are usually regarded as semiconductors by definition, although similar behavior is observed in some metals. Therefore, in some cases, it is actually acceptable to speak about metal quantum dots. Typically, though, quantum dots are composed of groups 2-6, 3-5, and 4-6 materials. Quantum dots are bandgap tunable by size, which means their optical and electrical properties can be engineered to meet specific applications. So by changing the size of the quantum dot that we synthesize, we change the band gap and therefore the properties of the material. So let's discuss quantum confinement. This is actually a spatial confinement of electron hole pairs or excitons in one or more dimensions within a material. If it's one-dimensional confinement, we call them quantum wells. For two dimensions, a quantum wire, and for three dimensions, a quantum dot. So we've been discussing the three-dimensional type of quantum confinement. Quantum confinement is more prominent in semiconductors because they have an energy gap in their electronic band structure. Metals don't have a band gap, so quantum size effects are far less prevalent. Quantum confinement is only observed at dimensions below 2 nanometers. Recall that when atoms are brought together in a bulk material, the number of energy states increases substantially to form nearly continuous bands of states. To depict this, the figure below shows a nitrogen atom and the electrons in their various energy levels, as opposed to many, many atoms being together, let's say, in a solid, where the energy bands overlap, or the energy levels overlap, and we form two continuous bands of states. The reduction in the number of atoms in a material results in the confinement of normally delocalized energy states. Electron hole pairs become spatially confined when the diameter of a particle approaches the de Broglie wavelength of electrons in the conduction band. As a result, the energy difference between energy bands is increased with decreasing particle size. So to reiterate, the final point here is as particles, quantum dots are produced with smaller sizes or smaller radii, we have an increase in energy between the energy bands, or a larger band gap. So quantum confinement, how does it really work? Where does it come from? Well, it's very similar to the famous particle in a box scenario, and it can be understood by thinking about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. This states that the more precisely one knows the position of a particle, the more uncertainty there is in its momentum, and vice versa. Therefore, the more spatially confined and localized a particle becomes, the broader the range of its momentum or energy. So, as the quantum dot becomes smaller and smaller, it's more spatially confined, therefore we know more and more about the electron's location. But then, there's much more kind of probabilistic range for its momentum and energy. This is manifested as an increase in the average energy of electrons in the conduction band, increased energy level spacing, and therefore a larger band gap. The band gap of a spherical quantum dot is increased from its bulk value by a factor of 1 over r squared, where r is the particle radius. So quantum confinement, what does this mean? Quantum dots are band gap tunable by size. We can engineer their optical and electrical properties, thus by creating different size quantum dots. Smaller quantum dots will have a larger band gap, while larger ones will have a smaller band gap. Also, absorbance and luminescence spectrums will be blue shifted with decreasing particle size. If we look at the figure below, and we look at, let's say, this green quantum dot particle, we see a large band gap and a wavelength of light being emitted at 550 nanometers. This is higher energy than the one over on the right. This bigger red one, it's a larger particle, has a smaller band gap, and therefore gives off a lower energy wavelength of light. In this case, it's redshifted around 650 nanometers. So, quantum dots can be thought of as nanocrystals from, let's say, 2 to 10 nanometers of semiconductor compounds. The small size leads to confinement of excitons, or electron hole pairs, and quantized energy levels and altered relaxation dynamics occur. Examples are cadmium selenide, lead telluride, and indium phosphide. Again, absorption and emission occur at specific wavelengths, which are related to the quantum dot size. So, smaller quantum dots will have larger band gaps and therefore tend to be blue shifted, while larger quantum dots will have smaller band gaps and tend to be red shifted in the wavelengths of light being emitted and or absorbed. Okay, so now that we understand quantum confinement, let's discuss some different ways to synthesize these quantum dots. One general production technique is colloidal methods of quantum dot synthesis. One example is the synthesis of cadmium selenide quantum dots. And I'm not going to read this whole thing here, but basically you take elemental selenide, create a precursor solution, then we dissociate and cap the selenide. We mix in some cadmium oxide, a little bit of acid, add some heat to give energy for the reaction to occur. Once the cadmium oxide solution reaches 225, the precursor solution is added, and varying the amount of solution added to the cadmium oxide solution will result in different size quantum dots. In the top picture, the quantum dots are being shined with UV light, thus we're seeing fluorescence. And in the bottom half of the picture, we're just using visible light, thus we're seeing absorbance. Another type of quantum dot synthesis route is epitaxial growth. This epitaxial growth refers to the layer-by-layer deposition and growth of monocrystalline films. A liquid or gaseous precursor condenses to form crystallites on the surface of a substrate. The substrate acts as a seed crystal. Its lattice structure and crystallographic orientation dictate the morphology of the epitaxial film and growth. Epitaxial growth techniques can be used to fabricate quantum dot core shell structures as well as quantum dot films. So, quantum dot films. These are thin films containing small localized clusters of atoms that behave much like quantum dots. Quantum dot films can be highly ordered quantum dot arrays or randomly agglomerated clusters with a broad size distribution. The structure of choice, arrayed or disordered, depends on the particular application. In the bottom left, we can see a scanning electron microscope image of a highly ordered indium arsenide quantum dot array. On the right, we see an atomic force microscopy image of a quantum dot film containing random agglomerated clusters of indium arsenide quantum dots. Again, the structure of choice, arrayed or disordered, depends on the particular application. Again, with epitaxial growth, we can also create core shell structures. Core shell quantum dots are comprised of a luminescent semiconductor core, which is capped by a thin shell of higher band gap material. If we look at the figure in the bottom, we see cadmium selenide as the quantum dot core, and then a small layer of zinc selenide, which is the shell. The shell quenches non-radiative recombination processes at the surface of the luminescent core. This increases quantum yield, or brightness, and photostability. Core shell quantum dots have better optical properties than organically passivated quantum dots and are widely used in biological imaging, mostly because of their increased photostability and increased quantum yield or brightness. There are a variety of epitaxial methods, which each have their own sub-techniques. There's laser ablation, vapor phase epitaxy, liquid phase epitaxy, and molecular beam epitaxy. These are all types of epitaxial growth for quantum dot synthesis. Now let's discuss some of the applications of quantum dots. First, we'll start with biological applications. Quantum dots can be used for biological tagging and labeling. It can be used for biological assays and microarrays, the labeling of cells and intracellular structures, in vivo and in vitro imaging, and for pathogen and toxin detection. Anything that we could have labeled with a normal organic fluorophore dye, we can now do with quantum dots. For example, in biological tagging, organic fluorophores, such as genetically encoded fluorescent proteins like GFP, or chemically synthesized fluorescent dyes, have been the most common way of tagging biological entities. But there are some limitations of organic fluorophores. First of all, they do not continuously fluoresce for extended periods of time. Secondly, they often degrade or photobleach. And lastly, they're not optimized for multicolor applications. The unique optical properties of quantum dots make these suitable for biological tagging and labeling applications. Quantum dots are excellent fluorophores. Fluorescence is a type of luminescence in which the absorption of an incident photon triggers the emission of a lower energy or longer wavelength photon. Quantum dots absorb over a broad spectrum and fluoresce over a narrow range of wavelengths. This is tunable by particle size. So, the big idea here is that a single excitation source can be used to excite quantum dots of different colors, making them ideal for imaging multiple targets simultaneously. Again, the big point here is that different sized quantum dots, which therefore have different size band gaps, and therefore emit different colors, can all be excited by a single light source. Absorption and emission spectra of cadmium selenide, zinc sulfide quantum dots compared to rhodamine, a common organic dye. Here what we're showing is the absorption spectrum, the dashed lines of the quantum dot. It's very broad, whereas that of the organic dye is narrow. So as far as an absorption spectrum, we would like to see a broad spectrum, and that's what we see for the quantum dot, but the organic dye, rhodamine, the absorption spectrum is narrow. Conversely, the emission spectrum, the solid lines of the quantum dot, is more narrow than that of the organic dye. For emission, we want a narrow emission band. Therefore, we can have multiple quantum dots with their different colors all being used to kind of target or label at the same time. Putting this all together, we see that a broad absorbance and narrow emission spectrum means a single excitation source can be used to excite quantum dots of different colors, making them ideal for imaging multiple targets simultaneously. This figure shows cadmium selenide zinc sulfide quantum dots used to image cancer cells in a live mouse. These are three, perhaps different types of cancers, and the quantum dots have been linked to the different types. Quantum dots are an attractive alternative to traditional organic dyes because of their high quantum yield and photostability. Quantum yield is equal to the number of emitted photons divided by the number of absorbed photons. Quantum dots have a high quantum yield because they have a high density of energy states near the band gap. Higher quantum yield means brighter emission. The quantum yield of some quantum dots is 20 times greater than traditional organic fluorophores. Photostability is a fluorophore's resistance to photobleaching or photochemical degradation due to prolonged exposure to the excitation source. This is a common problem in organic fluorophores, but we don't see the same problem in quantum dots. This figure kind of generalizes some quantum dot materials, showing their relative sizes and emitted wavelengths. For example, if we pick the one on the far left, it's cadmium sulfide, and we see the emission wavelengths from about 400 to 450 nanometers, and that's ranging over diameters of about 3 to 5.5 nanometers. And if we look at the top, we see the wavelengths of emitted light. So what we're showing here is just by using different semiconductor compounds and just a small range of size differences, we can cover the whole visible spectrum. And this makes these, again, excellent for biological tagging. Bioconjugated quantum dots, another application of quantum dots in biology. The surface of quantum dots can be functionalized with what are called affinity ligands. These can be antibodies, peptides, or small molecule drug inhibitors, which are used to target specific types of cells for in vivo or in vitro imaging. The affinity ligands are not bound directly to the surface of the quantum dots. They're actually usually connected to a linker molecule, referred to as a capping ligand or coordinating ligand. Polymers such as polyethylene glycol, or PEG, as it's often called, may be introduced to reduce nonspecific binding of the affinity ligands. So here we see a picture of a quantum dot with a capping ligand, the PEG layer, and finally affinity ligands. The coordinating ligands serve a dual purpose in bioconjugated quantum dots. They bind the affinity ligands to the surface of the quantum dot. They also encapsulate the quantum dot in a protective layer that prevents enzymatic degradation and aggregation. Degradation, I think, is pretty clear, but aggregation would be if the surface of the quantum dots weren't protected, they would tend to clump together, producing kind of larger masses, and therefore they would no longer exhibit the quantum confinement of which we like to use them for. The coordinating ligands dictate the hydrodynamic behavior of the quantum dot and are chosen according to the desired biocompatibility. Common coordinating ligands are avidin-biotin complex, protein A or protein G, and simple polymers or amphiphilic lipids. Here's a picture showing quantum dots conjugated with antibody molecules, which are blue, by using avidin, shown as purple, or protein A, shown in green, as linkers. Between 10 and 15 linker molecules can be attached covalently or electrostatically to a single quantum dot. This facilitates the binding of many or a few antibody molecules on each quantum dot. Quantum dots can also be used for biological assays, such as in DNA assays and microarrays. In the figure on the left, we see a quantum dot functionalized DNA strand. And the way this works is you have DNA capture probes, usually mounted to gold. And then we have a quantum dot, which is attached to the other half of the DNA strand. And as this kind of floats by, maybe in a microfluidic device, if we see a bonding occur, perhaps there would be a change in fluorescence, and then that could be detected with a certain type of camera. So on the right, we see basically kind of like a gene map or a microarray for many different little DNA strands being tested simultaneously. Each pixel contains a different DNA sequence, and fluorescence is observed if the sample binds. So, another application of these quantum dots are as light emitters. The discovery of quantum dots has led to the development of an entirely new gamut of materials for the active regions in LEDs and laser diodes. And LEDs are just light-emitting devices. Indirect gap semiconductors that don't luminesce in their bulk form, such as silicon, actually become efficient light emitters at the nanoscale, due to quantum confinement effects. The study of quantum dots has advanced our understanding of the emission mechanisms in conventional LED materials, such as indium gallium nitride, the active region of blue LEDs. The high radiative recombination efficiency of epitaxial indium gallium nitride is due to self-assembled, localized particles in rich clusters that behave like quantum dots. Additional applications. New applications for quantum dots are continuously being discovered. For example, solar cells that incorporate quantum dots may someday lead to more efficient light harvesting and energy conversion. Possible benefits of using quantum dots. Hot carrier collection is one example. These have increased voltage due to reduced thermalization. Multiple exciton generation. More than one electron hole pair per photon absorbed. And intermediate bands. Quantum dots allow for absorption of light below the band gap without sacrificing voltage. These are all possible added benefits for using quantum dots with solar cells. Quantum dots, collecting hot carriers. The band structure of bulk semiconductors absorb light having energy greater than the band gap. However, photo-generated carriers often thermalize to the band edges, as we can see in the figure on the left. On the right, we see that if we tune quantum dot absorption, we fabricate the correct size for the correct band gap, we can do this to match the incident light. This will allow us to extract carriers without loss of voltage due to the thermalization that we saw in the figure on the left. What this means is we're getting less heat and more current being generated. In bulk semiconductors, here's the second thing we mentioned. One photon will typically produce one exciton. So the absorption of one photon of light will create one electron hole pair, which then relaxes to the band edges. In quantum dots, one photon can yield multiple excitons. The thermalization of the original electron hole pair will create another pair. Again, the quantum efficiency for exciton generation can be shown here. It's the ratio of excitons produced to photons absorbed. Very similar to the normal quantum efficiency. Greater than 100% means that there are multiple excitons generated for every incident photon. And this occurs at photon energies much greater than the band gap. So overall, this figure is showing that we can have quantum efficiencies greater than 100% as photon energies increase greater than the band gap of the semiconductor quantum dot. Lastly, we mentioned intermediate bands. Conventional band structure does not absorb light with energies less than the band gap. So if a photon of light strikes a semiconductor material and its wavelength is such that the energy is less than the band gap, we have no excitation. But in quantum dots, they're actually intermediate bands within the band gap that can allow for absorption of low energy light. The figure on the right shows an intermediate band formed by an array of quantum dots. Here's an example of quantum dots being used in a solar cell. This is a P3HT cadmium selenide solar cell using cadmium selenide nanocrystals. And here's a cadmium selenide example of a sensitizer with nano titanium dioxide. So in conclusion, we started with a nice introduction to quantum dots and basically why their properties arise from quantum confinement. We discussed ways to synthesize quantum dots, colloidal methods, and epitaxial growth. And then we went over some common biological applications for tagging and light emitters, and then a couple additional applications in the use of solar cell technology.